Broken Dial Radio.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Broken Dial Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I am your host, Paulie Kroll, and joining me is Nate Stevens.
Hello.
This is episode 2, I guess, of the podcast.
Yep.
I guess we should do a little house cleaning on that front. So we had our first episode, which I titled episode 0, and that was our music of the year 2017, where we had a very long podcast with way too much music, but it was fun. And then we did our first episode, which was January releases. And we got the Spotify playlist up for both of those episodes with the full tracks that we listened to and everything like that. Little note there, if you are not a subscriber to Spotify, although you can listen to the podcast or to the playlists, it will shuffle in random assortments of other music that they think work, which is irritating.
Not cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm not even a Spotify subscriber anymore, because I've been using Apple Music, so I can't even listen to my own playlist as I would like to, but that's all right, because I also have it on Apple Music. But then I put up a bonus episode of my sister and I discussing a couple books by Jeff Vandermeer, because the Annihilation movie was in theaters, and I had this sitting, and we never actually released it on anything other than SoundCloud years ago, so I just said, hey, screw it. And I actually had some feedback on that, so definitely looking forward in doing more book episodes in the future as well. I'll get Nate in on that as well, because Nate loved to read. Yo.
Yeah.
And then
allowed to spoil book and video game?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We're also going to record our first video game episode on, what's the name of that game?
The Norwood Suite.
Yes, the one we talked about on episode 1.
Yep.
We just haven't had a chance to, I kind of wanted to get a chance to play through that again, hopefully with Nate or something like that, but we will get to that next. I just wanted to get a music episode up. So today's episode, we are going to, instead of doing monthly, seeing as it's been a couple months, we're just going to do a bunch of select albums that we enjoyed or wanted to talk about from since January. So from February on. Today is April 7th, but this probably won't go up till well after that. So I think that's all the house cleaning I had. We'll get into music in a second here. Well, I guess I did kind of want to bring up, there's a few things that we're not going to, albums that we're not going to have on here, whether it's because we didn't have much to say about it or we didn't have a chance to listen to it. So please understand, we're not trying to do every release that is good. I would love to, but nobody has time for that. And also I'm kind of picking and choosing when to use like pre-release singles and stuff like that. Something I'm very excited about is Burn the Priest, which is actually the band Lamb of God's original name, is coming out with an album, and they released a single for it, but I'm not going to showcase on that. I'm just going to wait till the actual album comes out so we can discuss it in detail there.
But so what's going to make you decide two cover singles and versus not?
Case by case. We have a lot of stuff to cover on this episode already, so I was just like, let's wait till the album's out, because I'm definitely going to want to talk about that album, because I'm a huge Lamb of God fan, and I was a Burn the Priest fan before they were Lamb of God, and, well, not before, after, I guess, I heard of Lamb of God first, but then I also enjoyed the Burn the Priest albums. So that's going to be cool. That's going to be a cover album that they're putting out for their 20th anniversary with the old band name, and that ought to be interesting. But unless you had anything to bring up, Nate, I suppose we can start getting to the tunes.
Let's do it.
All
What's
right.
up first?
So to start things off, I had Brandi Carlile with her new album, By the Way I Forgive You. I'm a big Brandi Carlile fan, have been for a while now. She's from the Pacific Northwest, Ravensdale, I believe. But she started out in the Seattle area and everything like that. And I actually heard one of her songs on terrestrial radio and really dug it and was like, this is a song I should cover. And then went into, that's right before her last release, The Fire Watcher's Daughter came out, which that album is amazing. That was my album of the year 2016, I think.
I kind of want you to know that in title's description of By the Way, I Forgive You, it says that it's a return of sorts, finding her shifting away from, quote, the ramshackle mess of 2015's The Fire Watcher's Daughter.
That's ridiculous. That's like
rude. Yeah.
Her most popular album. It is a return to form because she has had like a lot of different kind of feels to her albums, and Fire Watcher's Daughter was way more rock influenced, folk rock, but still it was heavier than like anything else she's done. But yeah, she was like nominated for a Grammy. I'm not sure if she won or not for that album. So that's kind of ridiculous. I wonder who writes for title.
It looks like the writer's always credited. This is Thomas Erlewine, Stephen Thomas. I'm going to look him up.
But while you look that up, I suppose let's get into the first track that I had here. This is The Mother. This was written for her daughter as kind of, I guess I should say I just saw her in concert, last weekend, and, She put on an amazing show, and she talked a lot about the music and stuff like that. And one of the things she said about this song was, being a, having a daughter with, her wife, was something that trying to prepare for was not easy because all of her friends, like the, fathers would give her advice because she wasn't the one carrying the child. And she's like, that advice didn't really work for me. So this song's kind of about her coming to terms with motherhood, but in like a loving way. It's an interesting song, but here's a little clip from it. And they've still got their morning paper and their coffee and their time. And they still enjoy their evenings with the skeptics and the wine. Oh, but all the wonders I have seen, I will see a second time. From inside of the ages through your eyes. You are not an accident where no one thought it through. The world that stood against us made us mean to fight for you. So yeah, it has a lot to do with like coming to terms with your life changing when you become a parent, and but still she has this like appreciation for being a mother at the same time.
So, her music is folk, right?
It depends on what album you're looking at. I think she bounces around a lot. She obviously has like a country twang to her voice.
Yeah. But it's not country.
I wouldn't call it country, although some of the songs are very country. I don't know. It's tough. Like Americana is probably what she's classified as, but sometimes it's heavier, sometimes it's softer. She does a lot of orchestration stuff. Or orchestral backing songs. I just think it's a blend of music. I would call it mostly folk rock for most of the songs I like, but this album is a lot softer and there's a lot more ballads and orchestral stuff. I forget the name of the person who wrote the string arrangements for her, but he's a well-known, I wish I had that note. He's a well-known composer. That actually passed away. This was the last album he wrote anything for. But
I do. Wait. I owe you an update on the music critic. Fans refer to him as the Roger Ebert of music criticism. Oh. He writes for All Music, which I have no idea if.
Oh, I have a All Music clip. Later on here, not clip, like I stole words from All Music.
I wonder if it's by Mr. Erlewine.
I'm not sure. All I credited was All Music because they're the entity.
Yes.
I didn't actually. It was like, hey, copy paste, because these are words. But I have a couple more songs from Brandy here. It's tough making these clips because I feel like Brandy's songs, a lot of them like tell a story. So I just tried to get like the song, Whatever You Do. I really like the intro. I like the lyrics with the intro, but it's not a good showcase of the song, which kind of sucks. But here is Whatever You Do.
If I don't owe you a favor, you don't know me. I don't believe we've ever even met. If there's a God in heaven you can show me, then I guess I should admit I lost the bet. There are moments I could hold you forever.
So that song does get a little bit more intense, and her band joins in and everything like that, but a lot of this album feels more personal and solo than her previous stuff did, although her band is always involved, or she has two people she writes the songs with, the Ansaroff twins. So they're actually a bassist and a guitarist, your twins, these two bald dudes. And I've heard, like, even at the concert, and I've heard her say before that she wished they weren't called Brandy Carlisle because it's not just her. But this song, this album feels so personal. So even if it is being written by multiple people, it still feels like a kind of dark and lonely, which makes sense for the theme of the album, I guess. And then I have one more track here from it. This is Hold Out Your Hand.
I run a lot of miles of life and crime, a mountain climbs and quitting times, packing that load of lying rhymes and tired jokes and wooden dimes. I've been everybody's friend, everybody's friend. I could lose my house, I could steal a car, I could serve two masters, living hard, living like a dog in a cage in a yard with a fistful of cold hard cash that I can't let go. The devil can't have my soul, the devil can't get your soul, the devil can't get your soul.
But yeah, I really, really, really like this album. I still like Firewatcher's Daughter better, but this album is growing on me more and more. And obviously going to the concert, having that was an amazing performance. She did, it was one of the best musical concerts I've seen, like on a music craftsmanship level. Like things like, they actually, years ago at the Moore Theater, they did a show called The Pin Drop, and that was absolutely no amplification. Because the Moore Theater is so acoustically, it's a very good venue for acoustics. So at this show, they actually came up front in front of the stage and had no amplification and played an acoustic song with harmony and everything like that.
That's
and
cool.
For a sold out show at the Moore, like everybody just got extremely quiet except for like the one guy that started walking up the stairs and everybody could hear every creak of his footsteps and everything. It was really cool. They did like a Led Zeppelin cover of Baby I'm Gonna Leave You, where she just belted out a awesome emotional lyrical performance. And I didn't even know that she played the piano, but she does. And right at the end there, they played a Table for One, and she was just impressed me even more how good she is on piano while singing and everything like that. But yeah, not to spend too much time on Brandy, but she deserves it, I think. The album online has also been getting a lot of attention, mostly from the song The Joke, which is a more of a political song for her, where it's talking about people who are kind of outcast for their sexual orientation or sexuality and things like that. And her, like, the point of the song is, or the punchline of the lyric, which is a weird thing to call for the joke, is let them laugh while they can. I've been to the movies, I've seen it, how this ends, the joke's on them. Or a better way to say that. But it's a really powerful song, and I feel like I've been seeing a lot of articles written about that. She also performed at the March for Our Lives, the gun control rally that went on recently.
Yeah.
So yeah.
She in the Seattle one?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah. So to spend a little bit more or a lot more time on Brandy, I wanted to do something that I haven't done yet because we always talk about how it sucks that we can't listen to the whole song, and we can't do that for copyright reasons, obviously, because I'm not close personal friends with any of these artists, and I can't, although reaching out to Twitter on them hasn't been successful yet. Maybe one day.
Soon.
I did record a cover of a Brandy Carlile song. Ooh. A few years ago. I'm going to play the entire cover I did of Shadow on the Wall, one of her older songs. This is a cover. It's not great audio quality. It's something I just put together quick and threw on Facebook, and I just kind of stole the audio from there. So here is my cover of Shadow on the Wall by Brandy Carlile. All right.
I love it, man. That was awesome.
Thank you. I realized after pressing play here that it's kind of awkward forcing you to listen to a cover of mine like that. But
no, not at all. I think it's amazing.
But yeah, I really want to be able to get more full songs on here. I would love to do that. So if that's what we have to do, then I will cover every song. No, not exactly.
We should, instead of playing clips, we should just have you cover one song from every album.
Yeah.
This would be really good with some of the electronic music.
Yeah, I'll get one episode up a year at that rate. So yeah. Next up, let's move on to something.
Wait, I wanna say one quote from her. I've gone through all sorts of vocal phases from pop to blues to R&B. And no matter what I do, I just can't get the country and western out of my voice.
Yeah, and it's weird too because like she's from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Where did that come from? Strange. But yeah, let's move on to. I don't know anything about this, so hopefully you have something to say about JB Tracks?
Oh, man. Yeah. I don't know what to say about this. It's just a really interesting. He's from, what, Berlin, I think, right?
I don't know.
Did you have a clip? That would probably say all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Let's play that. Every Day of My Life. What's the name of this album? Mixture. All right. This is Every Day of My Life off of Mixture. The next track as well.
I was wrong. He's from a city I don't, Wiesbaden, Germany. But basically, I feel like I think I throw in every new release on Springtube, which is one of my favorite record labels on here. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if his sound is more indicative of Springtube or just German house kind of music. It's not like a particularly interesting or envelope moving album, but it's just something that I like to put on the background, I think, kind of when I read and stuff like that.
I haven't listened to too much, but I didn't get the strongest house vibes from it. I got like some kind of electronica. What do you call that?
I mean, what we were playing is very progressive housey.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just kind of there's almost a sound of this label in particular. I forget where Springtube is out of. I think it's like Latvia and Estonia. They're kind of that sort of Eastern European progressive house sound. They have, I'm trying to think of who they're most, probably Bloodgroove and Kiki's are the most like well-known artists, and they're all very, it's just very housey.
At some point, I feel like house music and trance music switched.
That is correct.
Positions in my mind. It's like, it sounds like trance to me, but it's called house for some reason.
They actually did pretty much reverse at the end of the 90s. They're pretty much the opposite genres of what they used to be. So that is accurate.
That'd be interesting if other music genres did that, like metal and country.
It would be really weird. I guess like house had its roots in disco, and then it was kind of just like very disco-y for a while. But then in the 90s, a lot of British DJs started moving it in a more progressive way. And that kind of, what was turning into progressive house then kind of became trance music. There was sort of this weird crossover. It's kind of hard to explain, but Sasha was a big... Sasha and John Digweed were kind of big voices in that sort of transition.
Interesting. I have one more, actually. This is Epic from JB Tracks Mixture.
I'm glad you picked that one because I really like. I feel like it's kind of cheesy, but it's a really interesting song, like half orchestral, half electronic.
Yeah, no, I that's why I picked it because I dug that one. That sounded way more housey to me. So
I don't even know what I would. Yeah,
but yeah, it has a little bit of that space electronic that we've talked about before, kind of like that FTL instrumentation.
Sibient, I believe, was the genre we settled on for that.
It's some. Yeah. I think it's just a specific synth that reminds me of space.
I wish I knew more about, like, I could call out and name synths, but
yeah.
Yeah, one day.
Which day?
Today.
Okay. If not now,
that
then
is,
when?
That is the infamous 809 synthesizer.
All right. Perfect. How funny would that be if you were correct? I think, like, 809 is probably a kick drum or something like that, though. I know 807 is.
Well, are you thinking of 808?
Yes, I am.
Yes. Yes.
807 is the lighter version.
There is a Roland TR-809.
809 is the heavier version. So,
it's the same as the 808, but has some sampled sounds like the TR-909?
Is that a question?
And then someone says, I've never heard of it before. I've been searching and can't find a single page. Anyway, moving on.
Moving on, next up, we have the new album from Ministry, Americant, stylized with 3 Ks.
Yes. Not very subtle.
Yeah, Ministry hasn't been subtle, so I don't know. You probably don't have much history with Ministry, but...
They just came out of dormancy, yeah. Thanks to the election of a certain president, it sounds like.
Yeah, so Ministry has been around forever, since the 80s. I guess that's not forever. But they've changed kind of their sound a lot over the years, but still kind of kept the same style. They had a lot of popularity in the 90s with Jesus Built My Hot Rod, which was actually on the radio, I believe. which is funny because it's a song that was like something that was just a dumb thing they did. They got what's his name? From the Crash Test Dummies, I believe, into the studio, and he was so like hammer drunk that he couldn't like put down a performance, so he kind of just like mumbled into the mic, and then Al Jorgensen from Ministry spliced together this song with what he had available. And this is before like electronic editing too. This is with tape. He edited it together and everything like that, and it's definitely one of their most popular songs, if not one of the most ridiculous songs. But I'm also excited because that's going to be one of the covers that Burn the Priest are doing on their upcoming release. So, Ministry was also featured on the soundtrack to a movie. What movie it is, you ask? I think Steven Spielberg did it. You're going to help me figure this out. It has a little kid who's an AI. Maybe the name of the movie is AI.
Boy, my Spielberg.
Isn't there like a little kid that looks kind of like the kid from
AI, Artificial Intelligence? It is Spielberg.
All right, yeah. So they were featured on that because they do future music, apparently. And then after that, they did probably, 8 or 10 years of anti-Bush albums? Multiple? Yep. A whole fuckload of
anti-Bush. They had a lot of material thrown at them, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. With a lot of samples.
Learning about, yeah.
And so Trump's elected and inspires Al Jorgensen for another Ministry album, of course. So he came out with this. The album is focusing less on directly bashing Trump and more on just bashing America for doing this to us, I guess.
I see.
But let's
just
check
general anger, huh?
Let's check out the album opener, I Know Words. So it's the opening track, and it kind of slowly builds into the second track, but both starts and ends with, or throughout it has samples of Trump, and opens and closes with We Will Make America Great Again.
Can you rank its You know Pogo, right?
No.
The musician that does like the samples from Disney movies and then makes them into beautiful music.
I do not know that.
Remember the Star Trek one I linked you to? That I was like obsessed with for like 3 months? Data and Picard?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. That's
cool. That guy does that kind of stuff with a bunch of Disney movies. He's most famous for his remix of Up called Upular. He like uses like micro samples to make like beautiful, amazing, incredible music. He did one with Trump as well, and it makes Trump sound funny and humorous.
Hmm. Ministry,
on the opposite end of the tonal scale.
Say, yeah, I would compare Ministry more to something like public service broadcasting, where they have their own sound and they utilize news and vocal samples to kind of convey a theme or a tone.
Yeah, that's interesting. Totally.
But yeah, so I Know Words builds and builds and builds into the next song, which I have a sample of here, Twilight Zone.
Okay, so I only had time to bounce off this album, but I skipped through this song, and I was really interested in what showed up in your clip. Is that harmonica with a shitload of reverb?
Yeah, that's Al Jorgensen playing the harmonica.
That's so interesting.
Yep.
I like clipped through that, and it's like, whoa, this is neat.
Yeah, I was wondering that too when I first heard the song, and luckily they do have a video for Twilight Zone, and he's totally fucking belting out the harp during the video, and it's crazy. It's Ministry is a very interesting band because they're so, like, if you just heard that riff, it'd be like, it's such a meathead, like, simple metal riff.
Yeah.
But they have, like, these very interesting editing techniques and very interesting instrumentation. Like, obviously, you heard the violins and cellos. I'm not sure exactly. I'm not good with string instruments. But string instruments and the intro and almost had, like, a Middle Eastern feel to it.
Yeah,
but then they also are primarily a industrial metal band, which is as far as I know, the first band that was really ever doing that before like Rob Zombie came and completely stole their act and everything like that.
I guess when I had looked up this group, I was expecting just angry metal.
Yeah, and Al Jorgensen
anti-Trump sentiment,
and
it's not quite. Yeah, that's not quite. There's much more to it than that.
An angry metal guy, but I also feel like he's sort of a genius, but he's very ravaged by years and years of drug abuse. But still, I have a lot of respect for Al and Ministry. I have liked some albums more than others, but I totally feel like this is. I don't know. This might be better than The Last Sucker, which was the last anti-Bush album. It's just easy to... We thought Bush was bad. It's so easy
that was a time. Yeah.
To get anti-Trump, for me at least. But not to get too political here, but yeah, fuck Trump. And I had one more Ministry clip here. This is Game Over. So yeah,
It's cool.
It is. I really like it. I've listened through a couple times. There's a couple other interesting notes. They got Burton C. Bell, the lead singer from Fear Factory, on one of the songs. I didn't get a clip of that, but
Fear Factory is like a famous industrial band, right?
Yeah, industrial metal.
Okay,
but I'm a big Fear Factory fan. Although unless I completely missed it, I don't know if Fear Factory has done anything as of last few years, so just hearing Burton's voice, which he has an amazing fucking powerful voice, was really cool for me. And they even did a, so back in the 90s, they came out with TV2. And on this album, they have, what's the name of it? TV 3/4 Chan or something like that.
What?
Which is pretty much like a super like short sampling of noises and things. It's kind of a nostalgia play, I feel like. It put a smile on my face. So, yeah. That is Ministry's new album, Americant.
Can I make a really nerdy reference from a person who barely listens to songs and lyrics ever?
Mm-hmm.
Referencing back to the JB Tracks album. There's mm-hmm. a song called, it's track 4, No Other Love. And it has this quote, no other love can be defined until that love has properly been understood. Which I've heard in other electronic songs, and I was trying to figure out where it came from. Apparently, I think it is from an old drum and bass song by Drifta called Love. And the full lyrics are, what happens when life breaks down, when there is systemic contradiction, and those inviolable sanctities were preserved in those 10 words, and it is the desacralization of all these that has put us in the mess we find ourselves. Isn't it true? Alas, it is much worse. A person may end up believing in anything. You know, if that human acceptance does so much for you and me, think of what it is when God himself puts his arms around you and says, welcome home. What love is this? It is God's love, and no other love can be defined until that love has properly been understood. And the reason I was looking it up, because I was convinced it was like a Bible verse, but I don't think it is. I think it's just from this song.
Well, it doesn't sound like a Bible verse, but it absolutely sounds like a spiritual prose of some sort. But I would be very surprised if it came from a drum and bass song, because they just sample things. They don't think of their own ideas.
Yeah. Well, yep. Well, let's see.
That was a joke.
It, well, I mean, you're not entirely wrong either.
That's why it's a joke, because jokes are funny.
I'm going to keep looking this up, because it's quoted all over the place.
Mm-hmm. I can see how Ministry inspired you to get all religious on us.
Yes, I mean, it was quite simply a logical transition.
All right. If you want to keep looking that up, I guess we can move on to the next pick here. We have MGMT put out a new album, Little Dark Age.
I liked it. It's very weird that you can play the clip or talk about it first. I'm just kind of...
No, I want to... I mean, don't let me overpower it. I just shocked. Like to talk.
I'm trying to remember where I saw this. Yes, actually, it's on Tidal's description again. After hitting it very big with their debut album and the song Kids, MGMT dedicated themselves to making albums that would confuse and annoy people looking to hear more expansive radio-friendly tunes like Kids.
Yeah.
That no, totally...
That's the whole MGMT story. They got fucking ridiculous breakthrough with Kids, and it was everywhere, and it still is. It's on the radio all the time. Like,
I guess it's interesting because I didn't... When I hear like a single on the radio and I go to an artist's like... full album, I expect it not to be as radio friendly, but it felt to me, reading this made me realize it always just kind of felt like they were trying too hard to be, or that they were just too weird for me, I guess.
There's articles like that and interviews all over the internet about that exact MGMT topic. From the interviews I've seen, it's kind of like a lot of times they get classified as like hating the fans of their debut. I think they just, they coped with the success in a different way, because the thing is, MGMT was always kind of a joke band. They were surprised that they had a breakthrough because they were like, oh, let's make a pop group. And then they did. And then they were like, oh, we're super popular. Like, that's crazy.
Lol.
But they were always experimental. Even the debut only had those couple songs that were super radio friendly pop jams, Electric Feel and Kids. But although the rest of the stuff did get very experimental, but that's the thing too. Like, you get all this money and you're like, well, now you can do whatever you want for music. And they did. And I applaud that. Even if I'm not a huge fan of, I do like some of the stuff on their other albums, but I like their debut the best. I mean, I think it's the best stuff they put out, but if they enjoyed it, I mean, you know?
Yeah, dude, I guess I should finish the thought. That's not against them. I thought that was really cool because I like a lot of weird shit that people bounce off all the time. So clearly there's plenty of people out there who are into this. It was just very surprising to me to check out Little Dark Age and be like, oh, this is all... I mean, it's definitely still weird, but I like it a lot more. Maybe I'm getting older or something.
So, and then this album kind of like explores that, what they have been classified as for so long. I don't know if you, did you have a chance to check out the video for Me and Michael?
Oh no, but you kept telling me to.
Yeah, so Me and Michael is kind of like that story where like they go through, like they find, like in the video they like find a song online, they're like, oh, we should steal this, and then it becomes super popular and everything like that. And although that's not exactly what they did, like it's kind of like what they were going for. They're like, oh, this is what music, this is what successful music sounds like now, let's do that, you know. And it's a really funny video too, because it's kind of like that, like kind of grimy Tim and Eric style, where there's like their phones look like it's a weird shaped phone, that the whole back of it is like some kind of like wet meat, if you know what I'm talking about. And like they're like, you know, like very grimy photos of them eating chocolate and getting it on their face and hands and things like that.
God,
if you've ever seen any Tim and Eric, I feel like you have a visual of what I'm talking about.
All this checks out.
But yeah, I really like this album. I think Little Dark Age is absolutely one of my favorite albums on this list.
It's great.
Let's, instead of just talking about it the whole time, let's check out a clip from When You Die.
It's so weird. It's like funky indie electro meets like wonky pop. Like a lot of it sounds a lot like Pnau. I'm not even sure how to pronounce it. The Australian musical group. Are you familiar with them?
I think you brought that up on a earlier podcast. Actually, I know you brought up wonky pop when we were talking about Leia.
Oh yeah, yes, I remember that. I probably mentioned the Bag Raiders too, I'm sure, but. Yeah, Pnau is really cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Some bands I don't really know and don't try to genre-fy because it's just, I don't know. There's obviously elements of a lot of different things, and the different songs have different feels, but
like, yeah,
that song
especially.
Well,
you've made me feel a little self-conscious about my obsession with it, but.
Well, no, I mean, that's just
really
kind of how
I get excited when I get to draw links.
That's just kind of how your brain works. I feel like you kind of like to classify things, not in a bad way.
It helps me find other things that are similar. Yeah,
but yeah, that's why I feel like there's a genre called alternative, because nobody knows what the fuck to do with it.
Alternative, also known as miscellaneous.
Yeah, but let's check out the title track, which is more of a like kind of goth rock feel to it. So this is Little Dark Age. So that song, I feel like, is a mashup of ideas like The Cure, also John Carpenter 80s thing, and what's that genre of music that sounds like training videos from the 80s?
Slightly more specific.
I can't think of the name of it, but it's like, it's almost, I wish I could think of it.
I do too.
Your buddy Lucas, I think, talks about it often.
Synthwave?
No, not synthwave. It's a
vaporwave.
Vaporwave, yes.
Yeah.
There's definitely some vaporwave mixed in there, I feel like. But it's, I don't know. I like it. And then I have one more song here from it, which is, I can't remember, what does TSLAMP stand for?
I don't know. Is that a thing?
It's time spent looking at my phone. That's right. So here's, here's TSLAMP.
Oh my God.
Time spent sitting all
have a fun story about that song.
Okay.
I left this album on while I went into the grocery store with my girlfriend sitting in the car. And when I came back, that song was on. And I asked her, how do you like the new MGMT? And she was like, I don't know. I was looking at my phone. And I was like,
boosh. That's either a very clever joke or not.
It was not on purpose, but it was still hilarious. It's still a fucking awesome joke.
So I just discovered that there's an MGMT subreddit, which I guess I feel like I know about the internet. I've been around a few clicks, but I don't, I guess I forget that everything has a Reddit. Anyway, there is a MGMT cover album that people on Reddit are making that's sold on Bandcamp. I wonder if that's interesting.
I'm more surprised. I don't understand anything there. It was like you just said, like, hey, I just found out that Wikipedia has, like, different sections on bands.
Yeah, I guess that was the... It's more the cover album that existing on Bandcamp that surprises me.
Who is doing the cover album?
A bunch of different Redditors, so they're all credit. It's like, track one is Song for Dan Tracy, /U/human alum... Human aluminum. And then track two is Astromancy, /U/Into the Woods.
So Reddit is becoming self-aware and making its own music now?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. That's actually, yeah, it could be totally. Yep. That makes sense. At least April 1st. Oh, it's free too. Is it good? Let's play the first one.
We're not going to hear it.
No, I was just going to tell you if it's good in a hot take.
Can you hum along?
But the sound isn't playing. No, I can and will not.
All right. So yeah.
Well, that's exciting. Sound wasn't playing for my web browser. Anyway, that exists.
Does it have any songs from the new album?
Or
is it all in a very hipster way? The music from MGMT that everybody's talking about that they don't like?
God. Well, yeah, okay. You're right. That would be the most Reddit. No, the track 12 is a little Dark Age.
All right. Because I just had an idea where it's like, how must it feel to be this band where every interview is like, so you guys have sucked for a while. What's new?
Yeah, that's accurate.
Not that I think that, but you know, like that's kind of how I've seen the conversation going. That's how our
Wait a
conversation kind of went.
No, I don't think that. Well,
I don't think so either.
I don't
think
they suck, but like.
But we talked about that. That's
seems
what
like you're interested in making human music again.
Well, I don't know. I think are they or are they interested in making robot music again? That's the question.
Whoa! Also, critical update. It's /R/MGMT2. There's already been one album, so there's that. What's up next?
So up next is something I'm very confused.
Yeah, I know exactly what we're going to talk about.
So you have helped me discover this because, all right, so Stone Temple Pilots came out with a new album. Obviously,
titled Stone Temple Pilots.
And they are.
It's the second eponymous album.
Yes. So they came out in 20...
They didn't start... But this band has been around since, what, the 90s, if not the late 80s?
90s.
I guess it's not abnormal to only release an eponymous album 20 years on into your band's history.
But it's so strange, the circumstances surrounding
again.
That. Because I was a huge Stone Temple Pilots fan when I was a kid. Stone Temple Pilots was the Stone Temple Pilots and Local H was the first concert I ever went to. And I really liked the first albums, Core, Purple, even Tiny Music, I was a big fan of at the time. But obviously over the years, the band had a lot of conflicts. Scott Weiland, the frontman, had a lot of drug problems and he didn't get along with the band at all. So eventually, in 2010, they released this self-titled album. And then shortly after that, I think only a few months after that release, they fired him from the band. And so they hired on Chester Bennington from
Bennington.
From Linkin Park. And then Scott Weiland died of a drug overdose. Yep.
Well, you forgot one key event. So they hired Bennington in November 2015. And in December Wait a minute. So they hired... May 2013, they hired Bennington. In November 2015, Bennington left. In December 2015, Waylon was found dead, which is interesting. So in 2016, they launched an online audition for a new lead vocalist. And then in 2017, Bennington passed away. And then in November 2017, Jeff Gutt became the new singer of the band.
Yeah, so that's kind of the thing that's weird, like having two follow-up self-titled albums and having both of the last two people who fronted your band die. And the craziest thing is this Jeff Gutt guy. So he's a X Factor finalist.
Yeah, yes.
And the thing is, this is a good Stone Temple Pilots album. But what I'm so fuck? Conflicted because he just sounds like almost exactly like a clean Scott Weiland.
And I would make you guess what song he finaled on. He drew most international acclaim for covering Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah.
Yep.
Which is weird that gets you onto Stone Temple Pilots.
But it's so weird because I'm so conflicted because I liked Stone Temple Pilots and I felt like so much of that was Scott. But this album clearly shows that it was the DeLeo brothers who was the driving force behind it. But I still have a problem appreciating this album because it's this, like, who is this guy and why does he sound just like Scott? Like, it's so weird.
I found this album completely unremarkable. Yeah, I absolutely know what you're saying. Because I think of them as, like, quintessential, like, when I think of, like, 90s music, I think of them as, like, right up there in the top list of...
Let's take a quick listen to Guilty here from the album.
Okay.
So I can see what you're saying on Remarkable, but the thing that's remarkable to me is how much it sounds like I would expect a Stone Temple Pilots album to sound like if none of those things changed ever. But all this shit happened, and then they're just still, they're like, oh yeah, we'll just keep doing it, you know?
Yeah, we good. Well,
it's just so weird to me.
It is very strange. It's like, yeah.
I don't even know if I like it. I have a problem in enjoying it because I'm so conflicted.
Yeah, you're stuck. I'm totally with you. It's very like, yeah, it's confusing.
And I guess even it's harmless, but like I feel like it's kind of like pissing on Scott Weiland's memory, and I also kind of feel like the band doesn't care, you know. Because
you think it's kind of dishonoring to pick a clone, essentially.
Yeah, they did have a falling out and everything like that. And I almost feel like this is them saying, like, see, like he didn't.
We can replace you.
Yeah,
yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, that makes total sense. It's like not acknowledging a major change, kind of.
Yeah, and also like there's something missing too. I feel like the heroine isn't there anymore.
It's yes. That's a very good way to put it.
All right. So that brings us to Nate's lover.
My favorite. Untitled Patterns, EP 1. Yes. Because apparently sometimes even the most genius music producers get fucking tired of making titles.
Or is it because this is just stuff he had lying around?
I mean, it could be. Although I get the feeling he's kind of a perfectionist. Huh. But what do I know? This is part of an ongoing series of bops, Untitled Patterns. I think it's 3 that are planned this year for release on Med School, which is Hospital Records, like more experimental imprint. Holy shit, these songs are cool. They're all like dub techno, basically, I think is kind of the overarching genre. And they're all like very simple and quite repetitive and just like excellently produced. I think it's this EP more than anything else that's inspired me to like get a proper like audiophile setup for my phone and headphones.
I'm so sad to say that I strongly, strongly disagree. But let's take a listen to Untitled Patterns 51. Did you hear at the end there where the kind of sustained echo-ish noise started going, jumping off of the downbeat?
And
came slightly earlier than it. So that is the exact time when this all started going poorly for me. He keeps messing around with that. I don't even know how to explain it. Some kind of a like... It's not a reverb because it's like a beat before the beat. And it just is like fucking nails on a chalkboard to me. It drives me insane.
It's fucking you over.
It's so bad because like I can't like electronic music is so like rhythmic and like there's always such a straightforward pattern. And this is like it is, but then it also has this little thing that's just like I can hear it front and center every single time. It's all my brain can focus on. It's probably my fault.
Do you have a way to fast forward to the end of the clip? Let's hear it again.
Yeah, I could do that. So, right. Oh, this is the next one. Whoops. All right, yep. Let's go back to that one. So, do right. Did you hear it?
You mean how it's ending early or what? Like, what? No, I do not hear it. All I hear is sonic perfection.
So, okay, I'm going to try to... Let's start from the middle and see if I can pinpoint what is...
Yeah, talk over it.
Oh, this is the wrong one again. But this is doing it even more. That... See how there's two beats here that are not syncopated at all?
Kind of. You mean not aligned? I mean, kind of.
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun. Boom, ta, boom, ta.
Oh, you like, mean the drum kick underneath?
No, the dun 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 is what is driving me crazy.
Yeah, but isn't it like in a, I don't know what the time signature is. It's not in 4/4, right? Whereas the drum kick underneath is. There's some weird like.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The rhythm is fine. The rhythm is doing the standard is doing like a standard, but then there's that. I don't know, like reverby blinker, car blinker noise. it's so distracting to me, I guess. And
that's interesting.
It's probably not as big of a deal as I'm making it out to be, but it's all I can hear, and it's driving me insane through this album.
Was there a song that didn't have that on this one?
I feel like.
What was your favorite?
So 51 there is the first song, and at the beginning of that, right at the end of that is where it starts, and then it kind of carries through throughout, I think, all the songs, although there's some quiet parts where it isn't there, but pretty much anywhere there's a beat, it seems like there's like an unsyncopated noise of some sort that's kind of rhythmic, but it's at a separate rhythm and tempo than the beat of the song.
That's interesting. Do you have a clip of 55?
I don't.
Okay, that's like the most ambient one.
I mean, I should be able to...
I don't even know what to say about this. It's just, oh my God. I really love this minimalism.
Yeah. I don't know. There's other albums that have kind of had this kind of effect on me before. Ghosts from Nine Inch Nails had a lot of that kind of experimental electronic rhythm that I don't know why it is. It just gets under my skin. But the thing is, I appreciate that it's talented. It's just what he's going for is just doesn't work on my brain, you know? So yeah, I'm not bad-mouthing Bop. I'm more like talking about how myself.
Totally. Well, we're going to get to that shortly when we talk about one of the next albums for me. I wish I had more to say about this. I think it's objectively less interesting than his like full albums, which tend to flow together and be really interesting, especially Punk's Not Dead.
I still haven't listened to Punk's Not Dead, and now I'm even more curious because I really liked Not Your Cup of Tea EP.
So that, yeah, I'm just a sucker for albums, especially albums that are all mixed. And Punk's Not Dead is one of my favorite albums ever, except for the bonus track, which sucks. I don't like it. It's really bad. It ruins the whole thing. But also, Punk's Not Dead has an ambient rework that's also really, really beautiful to me.
How is it a bonus track? Is it like a special edition or something?
I don't know. It in title, it's not even credited as a bonus track. It's just track 14, Next Level. And it starts with like sound samples from Galaga, I think. And it's like unbelievably harsh and awful sounding. And it's just like not okay. It sounds like an alarm clock when you get to that track on the album. I don't know what. Yeah, it doesn't. It does not click with me whatsoever. Anyway.
So, next up, we have The Goddamn Gallows.
This album is ridiculous. I have to know how you know about these people.
So, that's an interesting one. My good buddy Scott Daly, who was a singer in one of the bands I was in years and years and years ago. I think he lives in Pennsylvania now. But he was trying to get me into Goddamn Gallows for a few years, and not by purpose, I just like never really listened to them, although I kept recommending it. And I just happened to notice this album was released when I was looking at new releases and everything. I was like, oh, cool. And I'm really digging this album.
It's so weird.
It's such a mix of things.
Yeah.
There's like elements of bluegrass and punk and hardcore, and there's a fucking accordion in most of it.
The description on their website, like the Google text, is rockabilly, psychobilly, punk rock, bluegrass, and metal, chock full of impromptu antics and of the shocking variety and hauntingly eclectic.
Yeah. That's a fucking excellent. Strange, that's way better than I could describe it. But let's take a listen to The Goddamn Gallows, Blackened Soul. We have a spy, but then won't you have it? So one of the reasons this album is growing on me so much is because the instrumentation, like what do we have going there? There's a banjo doing the main riff and there's an accordion. The drums are doing like a double bass, some sort of hardcore pattern, but it's like a slowed down one. And then we have the singer with his fucking Baroque. And then turning into like a Jello Biafra from fucking Dead Kennedys' Yowl. Like, there's so much to listen to on this album. But it's still kind of, you can still take yourself out of that analytical listening and like just enjoy the song because it's kind of like a bardic sea shanty or something like that.
It absolutely feels like, well, not that song, but some songs feel like Tom Waits meets like pirate music, and
yeah, absolutely.
It's just very interesting.
Take a listen to Down with the Ship here. This is absolutely a pirate song, but it's also fucking political. It's like, what the fuck? And they laugh and laugh and laugh at us to show as we hoist our rags to vote. They gave us the ocean, but there's a hole in the boat. Came rushing in. It's
so weird. And that was exactly the song I was hoping you'd pick for that comment. It's so weird. I've never heard anything like it.
I have. So I'm going to a concert on Sunday, and that concert is Amanda Palmer and Jason Webley. And Jason Webley is absolutely that, especially that song right there. That is his genre of music. He plays an accordion, a guitar, and he sings pretty much just like that.
What?
And he has awesome. Check out the song Icarus. Is two songs, actually. Check out Icarus by Jason Webley. And what's the name of the other song? Dance While the Sky Crashes Down. If you want more of that style of music, that's totally it. And he's also an interesting musician that has... Normally, yes, absolutely. What you said was, I've never heard anything like it, is exactly spot on. Because like, I've heard in interviews with him too, where he's like, they're like, what kind of music do you listen to that got you here? And he's like, I don't listen to the music at all. Like, I used to listen to Michael Jackson when I was growing up, you know, like
no touchstones.
Yeah, exactly. And
that's
the other,
really neat.
The other thing about Goddamn Gallows too, is they like, it's like, it can be heavy too. There's heavier songs on here, like Shit Wish is almost like a black metal style song on here. But then it's kind of also like a...
Jason Webley was a street musician. That's how he began his career.
Yeah, absolutely.
In Seattle.
It's kind of like a lightheartedness. Like, I feel like it would be a lot of fun to like drink with these guys kind of thing, you know?
Oh, yes, for sure.
So yeah, I'm really digging this, and I want to dig back into Goddamn Gallows' previous albums, because, but I'm probably going to keep listening to this for a while, because right now this is my favorite album from our collection of music here. I'm just, the more I listen to it, the more I like it. It's one of those deals where like there's so much going on where it's just fun.
Totally.
Which brings us to something you don't like.
Well, I don't. It's just that single. I didn't get much time to spend with this album. So, enlighten me.
All right. Well, we are talking about, listeners of the previous episodes will know what we're talking about, but Jack White put out an album, Boarding House Reach. And this is more of an experimental album for him, kind of getting away from his garage rock style that he's so well known for. But this first song I have here is the most Jack White of yesteryear on the album, I would say. So this is Over and Over and Over. Sorry about that last bit there.
Ugh.
Nate just hates him.
I just fucking... It sounds like he'd be used in like a slightly more edgy Apple commercial.
I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure that the White Stripes have been used in Apple. There's no way Apple hasn't used the White Stripes.
Right.
Seven Nation Army has been on every commercial as far as I know. But I still like the song for some reason, so...
I'm not saying it's bad. It's just, I don't, something, ugh.
The other pick I had here doesn't seem to be showing up. Let's see if I could find it. Oh, yeah, here is Respect Commander. This is way more experimental. He's having fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
There's a lot of weird stuff on this album. There's like one where he kind of raps on it. That first one we played Over and Over, then it kind of has like a Zach De La Rocha of Rage Against the Machine feel to me. So he's doing different things on vocals other than the thing that Nate, I feel like, really is bothering Nate is the high-pitched screaming and
the whooping.
Yes, the whooping. We just got Nate to listen to lyrics, and Jack is just trying everything he can to stop Nate from
pushing that boundary way too fast, way too hard.
But yeah, I think it's
it just feels so unorganized.
I feel like,
oh my God, that's the most electronic music fan thing to say.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But this, yes, that album absolutely is unorganized. And even for me, there's like a song on there with like experimentation that's just like, all right, like that's enough. But I still like some of the album. I don't think it's like anywhere near as good as some of the other stuff I've heard from Jack White, but it's interesting.
Wait, sorry,
it's
the White Stripes claim to be brother and sister.
Oh, they're actually they were actually husband and wife.
Yeah, that's a weird thing to claim.
Yeah. Well, they did get divorced, so maybe.
Yeah. Well, yes. Anyway, I find that curious.
Yeah. I'm completely derailed now. I don't know what to say anymore.
I don't think I'm gonna do it. I don't think the White Stripes or Jack White are gonna convert me.
No, I don't think so either. I didn't have much after hearing the full album released. I didn't have much faith that you would be a fan of it either. But I still think it's worth noting. I think it's an interesting album. I respect Jack White as a musician, immensely. And that's the thing. This album just feels like he's trying to have fun and do something fresh.
Yes. And I think that's very infectious and easily noticeable.
So next up here, we have The Sword. So we featured their single from Used Future on the previous episode. And the album's pretty good. It feels even more classic rock than their previous. I feel like they are, unlike Jack White, they are devolving into 70s music at a rapid pace. Not that they were ever like brand new, but they had more of like a Black Sabbath vibe when on the first album, Winter Wolves, I think was the first album, or that was might have been a song. But yeah, this one feels. Well, let's take a listen to Used Future and then talk about it. So yeah, it's almost like got a Skynyrd vibe to it or something like that at this point. Do you hear that at all? Or am I crazy?
A little bit. No, I can totally hear that. I don't have anything super intelligent to say, but I totally hear that.
Both like lyrically and like the riffs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It feels very
Definitely does sound classic
rocky. Southern classic rock. Which I mean it's good album, but they were originally classified as metal. I don't think that's going to be happening anymore.
Yep. Well, maybe like, yeah, like old school. Yeah. Not modernly,
but it's a good album. It's pretty, I selected just that song cause that kind of sums up how I feel about the album. It's just like a classic. It feels like a new classic rock album kind of, I'm not huge on it right now, but I feel like in the right mood, I would absolutely drink some beers and hang out on this album. So
totally.
So for more classic rock here, next up we have Book of Shade, who was
highly
70s disco rock artist.
That is correct.
Who made it. Actually, he was the inventor of the keytar.
Yep.
And he was the fifth member of ZZ Top.
Yeah, totally.
No, I know nothing about Booker Shade. Here we go.
Book of Shade is a German electronic duo that rapidly oscillates between really cool headphone-friendly albums and boring-ass German house music. And I feel like Night Surfing and Future Primitive, which is a dual single from whatever album's coming up next, totally falls into the boring house music category. I didn't find it very interesting. Did you like it?
I don't remember. I listened to it probably 3 months ago. And the reason it was Book of Shade was one of your albums of the year picks for, was it like Gravelly Street or something like that?
Galvany Street.
Galvany Street.
They're one of those names in tech house, and they're just very, very German. Very like they're kind of floating around. I think I probably mentioned on that episode that they always show up in Wipeout soundtracks, which are generally
Speaking of Wipeout, I have the song I selected here that I must have liked because I took a sample of it. Is Night Surfing?
Excellent. Now, if you think to yourself, I know house music, it probably sounds like that for 7 minutes and 28 seconds, you're more or less completely correct.
Mm-hmm.
I think the B-side of this single is much more interesting, Future Primitives, but I think what I really like is more reverb and kind of a bigger soundscape, if that makes any sense, and Future Primitives has that pretty good. But I don't think either are very interesting, but I'm also kind of a pleb in that I think that they're albums are more interesting. I really like The Sun and the Neon Light, which is a pretty cool album. And that's some of the singles that show up on Wipeout soundtracks, but a lot of it's just kind of boring house music. I guess that must get played in clubs over there. I'm not really sure what the, like.
But Nate, you like boring house music.
Who's grooving on this exactly? Like, where is this going? Who's listening to this? Is this in German techno gay clubs?
That
would make some sense.
We may be the only people.
Just one stream is us.
Yeah. The thing I realized, the reason I selected Night Surfing was for the name, because I had a realization that electronic music does a thing with naming where
it lives and dies by the name.
No, they have, I think it probably has a lot to do with not having any lyrics, but a lot of electronic music, I feel like more than any other genre, has like, what is this, what action does this song sound like? Like, oh, let's call it Space Cruising or Night Surfing. Or...
You mean, I know what you're thinking of. You mean Inner Space Cruising.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Which is more specific. You're right.
Like, what would my fictional character that I have envisioned do to this song?
Yeah, totally. I think that's fair.
Yeah. I'm going
to
apply this to every electronic song title from now on.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Do we have any good examples of that on today's? Let's see. Wow, bop is the exact opposite of this, just giving up on it altogether.
Well, I don't want to give away what we have in the future, so let's wait till we get there. I don't see too many examples. I see one example in the future. But
can we talk about... there's one song I completely forgot to put on the list that we don't have a clip of. Do you know of the artist Tom Misch? M-I-S-C-H?
No.
I have no fucking idea what Tom Misch is, but it's one of the first... I recently made a very good friend that seems to understand me very well, and she made some kind of music recommendation, and I was like, no, I hate this. This is human music. And then she's like, okay, what about Tom Misch? And I listened and was like, this is one of the most amazing music recommendations I've ever received. I don't know. I know he's British, of course. He's from London. He's like multi-instrumentalist. It comes off like... I don't know how to describe it, but he has this album called Beat Tape 2 that has a bunch of amazing stuff. But there was recently a single called It Runs Through Me with De La Soul, which, of course, I'd never heard of. But everyone else I've talked to about it has.
You did tell me about that, and I forgot because I was too distracted by the human music joke.
Yep. It Runs Through Me is a super awesome. It's almost like bossa nova, but with like little, with like obviously De La Soul doing hip hop in the middle of it. It's really awesome. I really like it, and it's great.
So yeah, the next thing I had here is another band from the 90s. The Breeders actually came out with a new album, and this is their first album with the original lineup since their debut. I don't know if you're familiar with the Breeders. They had a very popular song on the radio. I think Cannonball was the name of it.
I am not.
I know you're a cannonball.
Nope.
But yeah, so let's take a listen to Nervous Mary off the Breeders' new album. What's the name of this album?
All Nerve.
All Nerve, yes. All right, so this is Nervous Mary.
Heartbeat, hustle and pound sheets. Running down the wrong street.
I'm really liking this album. It's sort of what I would expect from a Breeders album, but also they have a lot more quiet ballady stuff that I wasn't expecting. But I don't know. I feel like this is an album that I really need to get on vinyl. It feels nostalgic to me somehow, if that makes any sense.
It does kind of sound, yeah. I mean, yeah, that does make sense.
It sounds very 90s alternative, I guess, but not in a bad way.
Yeah.
And I think 90s alternative is having a big resurgence right now because the internet has it available.
Yep.
I have a couple more I have one more track from them here. I thought I had two, but I guess I only have one. So this is Howl at the Summit, which is a great title.
I don't have anything interesting to say about this album, but is it because I don't have any connection with them from the 90s?
Possibly. Or you don't have any connection to the 90s.
Yeah, that checks out too.
But I don't know. This is one of those things where you can't get, I tried so hard to get like a sample to like show what this album is, and I just couldn't do it. So I eventually just gave up, and I was like, here's 30 seconds of it from 1:30 to 2. I would absolutely recommend this album. It's good, and I guess I don't have much to say about it either. It's just got such a cool feel.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It feels of its time and of our time at the same time, which is very weird.
Yeah, and it's like feels like artistic, but also like balanced with a kind of like groove. I don't know. I don't know how to explain how I feel about this album, I guess, but I like it. So, the Breeders, yay, they're back. Hopefully, they stay around this time. So next up here we have Carpenter Brut, I think. Is it Carpenter Brut? Is it Carpenter
Brut? I believe so.
Carpenter Brut. that's actually how we're going to do it from now on. So here is a sample of Monday Hunt from Carpenter Brut. We'll be right back.
be a bit loud, but yeah, that's probably fitting for the album.
I didn't change anything, so it's kind of strange, I thought. Maybe he just has a very loud album. So that's his actual first full-length like studio album, his first non-EP, I guess.
Yeah, because the last year's, or I think it was last year, was three shorter EPs, right?
Yeah. He also did work on Night Stalker, which is a documentary on, what is it? What wave? I forgot the name of the genre again.
What?
Synthwave.
Vaporwave? Synthwave? Yeah.
Synthwave.
He's like a very well-known name in the synthwave community.
Yeah, but I feel like this album is very different for synthwave. Like, there's so much more metal inspiration in it. And
it does feel, yeah, it almost feels more 80s in music, in that there's more, there's like rock bleeding in from all the sides, and it's not,
yeah, it's not, yeah, straightforward electronic. There's sax on a song. There's a couple songs with like straight up like almost like a metal singer. Let's check out the Beware the Beast, I think it's called. For a little sample of that.
I really like that song a lot.
Yeah.
The lyrics and the, yeah.
It's such a good tune. This is a great album. And it's not like I was getting tired of synthwave, but this seems so fresh for the genre. It's like, hopefully this leads to more people experimenting with live instruments. Like, there's guitar in here, there's saxophone, live vocals. It sounds like live drums. It doesn't even sound like electronic drums, but maybe he's just that good. I don't know. But it's not all heavy metal styled synthwave either. There's also this track here, End Titles. It feels more of like a, I don't know how, I hear this come up pretty often. One of the big places I saw it was in the video game soundtrack for Valhalla, or VA 11 Hall A.
That, yes, I think that's how it's meant to be pronounced. Go
where,
on.
Where it's sort of like a 90s Japanese RPG menu music type thing that I hear.
Where, in which?
Check out this. This is a sample from End Titles. This is where I hear it.
Okay. I'm so glad you brought up that specific song, because this is by far and away my favorite thing on the album. And my favorite kind of 80s-ish music is that, like, I have no idea how to describe it. I don't know if I would quite say JRPG menu music, but I could totally, I do see that.
Yeah, it's like there's like a funkiness to it, but it's not like.
Yeah, we're almost getting to like Sega soundtracks of like that FM funk kind of, it's just so good.
Yeah, yeah. So this is the, this is like got me so like I've liked synthwave, but I haven't listened to a lot of Carpenter Brut stuff. So, but I know he's like one of the leading figures in the movement.
Yeah.
I've always more gleamed towards, what's his name there? The dude, and, me and Will went out and saw him. It's very same style.
Oh, I don't remember, but I know what you're talking about. It'll come to us in like three albums, no doubt.
Yeah. Darn it. I feel really bad now because I can't think of the
name.
Well,
we can just
artist.
Google.
Google the name of the new
synthwave
album
artist.
Is New Model.
New Model? Really?
Mm-hmm. Or Perturbator. That's the name of the
album. Perturbator. Perturbator.
Yeah.
Perturbator.
I'm still going to say
right.
Perturbator. Because it makes more sense to me. But yeah, totally. Awesome album from Carpenter Brut. And
yeah, it's really good. I've been kind of skeptical of the big bands in synthwave, and I kind of felt like I was more into that In Title style, almost. I don't really know how to describe it. There's a record label called Ubiquitune that has really interesting songs that feel kind of similar to that, except very much from Sega's, like, that specific sound. I don't even know how to describe it. Ubiquitune has cool compilation albums that are totally worth checking out. But this album was really good, and it wasn't just loud and dark for kind of no reason. It felt more genuine to me. I don't really know how to say it.
It feels like he's been working on these songs and crafting these songs for a long time, whereas I feel like a lot of synthwave can be like, oh, that sounds cool, let's put that on the album.
Yeah, exactly. We're going for a sound more than like a song.
Yeah, it feels like there's more craftsmanship to this, like where he took his time and things like that. So
totally.
Cool. So next up, we have something that you liked quite a bit.
I fucking love this.
So I don't know anything about Modern Day Babylon.
Well, let me tell you what Google describes them as.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yes.
I forgot the exact thing. It is groove, ambient, instrumental metal is the entire description.
Yeah. That sounds about right. Let's take, so the new album is Coma. I thought the album art looked cool, and it said instrumental progressive metal when I saw it.
Yeah, that sounds more accurate.
So I was like, I'll check that out, and totally, this is fucking awesome. I hear some Degent mixed in here.
What is that?
Degent, it's popularized by Meshuggah and Sixth. It's kind of like a strange time signature style of metal.
Interesting.
Where oftentimes the guitar and the the guitar and the drums don't necessarily play in the same time signature.
What?
Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, let's take a listen to Coma from the new album Coma from Modern Day Babylon. So that's not a great example of the Degent I was talking about there.
Do you have another sample?
I do, but I'm having some trouble finding the... they didn't all make it into my playlist for some reason, so...
Apparently, the Periphery is a band that's considered the American apostles of the same genre, huh, as their somewhat poorly translated website says.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of But don't they have lyrics?
Periphery? Probably.
I can't remember what I've heard from them. But yeah, this is the other song I have, and I don't know the name of it. So, this.
Wonderful. It's so good.
Yeah.
All of it's so awesome.
It's also funny because the name of that song I didn't remember was called Memory.
That's great.
But yeah, it's a heavy listen, but somehow it's still relaxing. Like the title Coma is totally valid.
Yeah.
It's a weird way to describe the title of an artistic project, but
I'm trying to think of the bands in my past that are kind of the touchstone for where I really get the appreciation of this music.
I think Sean kind of has some similar stuff going on that we have talked about recently.
What is Chon?
Remember they had that?
Oh, C-H-O-N. That's right. Yes. I do like Chon. In fact, yes, that is very logical. I was thinking of like Liquid Tension Experiment.
Oh, and, yeah. Absolutely.
There was some instrumental albums from, I don't remember, but yeah, I was into this kind of stuff for a while and I really liked, yeah, I dig it.
Yeah, I haven't heard the name Liquid Tension Experiment in fucking forever. Thank you for
bringing you're welcome. I didn't know they were associated with King Crimson.
Yeah.
Which I had a metalhead friend here that was very much into. Mm-hmm. And then I liked Dream Theater, of course, but I liked their, I think they had instrumental albums, didn't they? I forget.
I've never been into Dream Theater, so that's a tough one for me.
I didn't realize they were founded in 85. That's crazy. Uh-huh. All right. Anyway, yes, I thought this album was beautiful and just the right balance of relaxing and aggressive for me to really get into.
Yeah.
I like this sentence. Modern Day Babylon is first DGent groove ambient Czech project. It was founded by Thomas Reklovsky in the end of 2010 and it started as a one-man project, period. Though today it performs as an instrumental trio who has passed its successful debut and is receiving unusual praises by critics. I don't know what that
means. What is up with all of your fucking passive-aggressive music reviewers that you're reading?
Well, this is on their official website. They're from the Czech Republic, so I do not think it's written natively in English.
Oh. Because they pretty much just said, like, oh, we liked us before we were cool.
Well, it's past its successful debut and is receiving unusual praises. What is unusual praises? Wow, this is really great for, like, being weird.
Yeah. It's like the opposite of MGMT. They're like, yeah, we haven't put out good shit in years, and now everybody likes us.
Yeah, actually, yep. All this checks out.
Yeah. So, next up, I don't know anything about this one either. You're gonna have to take the reins here.
Wait a minute. One of the guitar player for Modern Day Babylon says he's employed as a dental technician in a laboratory, and he's also a sound engineer. Hmm. What is a dental technician in a lab?
Maybe they make dental implant stuff.
I guess that would make sense. Or they're giving like better teeth to chimps.
Or they are working on, I don't have anything.
I wish we could talk about things that weren't released this month or even close to this decade. Because I just discovered Greenlandic hip hop.
Well, you did. I mean, we're not there yet, but you did suggest something from 1984.
I did. That's true. Although that's a re-release, so you got to give that one to me.
Oh, I didn't know it was a re-release. All I got was the 1984 release, and I was like, huh, that's a weird one for him to bring up.
It came out this month. It was re-released, remastered, or something. Ah. And I put it on there because I thought...
Well, I guess let's just skip to it. Let's talk about it now, if it actually came out in this year.
Yeah, so this is one of the weirdest things certainly one of the weirdest things we've talked about. So Ursula K. Le Guin is a very famous female science fiction author who wrote a lot of badass stuff that passed away, I think, last year. And she worked with this musician named Todd Barton to create this album, Music and Poetry of the Kesh, which is a companion album to one of her books from the mid-80s. And it's about like a futuristic, peaceful tribe of Californian people. And it's basically like an anthropology album where there's like native sounding song and dance in a language that she made up. And there's like, yeah, poetry and people laughing and, but also like music in their own culture. It's very like, I don't know what the use case is for listening to this, but it's very strange and interesting.
It sure is. Let's take a listen. So you describing it like that is interesting to me, because when I put this on, I was like, what the fuck am I listening to, Nate? This is some fucking new age. But so it's weird. So it's pretty much like the music that her made up science fiction world included. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So it's like, she passed away in January. It was this year.
There's also like a lot of like spoken word that I don't know if it's in a real language or not.
It's in a made up language as far as I know. Yeah, it came out in 1985. It was bundled with her novel Always Coming Home, which was like a portrayal of a future tribe of indigenous people living in an anti-colonial existence 500 years from now. Their lives ruled by nature and the seasons, and their story told by Le Guin in fiction, poetry, plays, recipes, ethnography, a glossary, and hand-drawn maps. This is like, yeah, it's like here's a good quote. So in like a speech at the National Book Awards in 2014, she said, "Hard times are coming when we'll be wanting the voices of writers who can see alternatives to how we live now, can see through our fear-stricken society and its obsessive technologies to other ways of being, and even imagine real grounds for hope. We'll need writers who can remember freedom, poets, visionaries, realists of a larger reality." So she kind of has this like very anthropological perspective. I guess we should say she wrote the Earthsea novels, which were pretty famous for being fantasy science fiction hybrids that start a female protagonist. Mm-hmm. She wrote The Left Hand of Darkness, which is all about like a planet where there was no gender, and that was in 1969. So this is a weird thing of its time, but also of the time that Dune was coming out. This was like, yeah, it's interesting to me studying anthropology and sociology, because she writes fiction like people in academics write about native cultures. And she tends to, I mean, yeah, I think the music and the poetry of Kesh, like a fantasy book that's written partly through recipes. Like, I think that says a lot about the author that would also write an album like this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Very interesting.
That's super interesting. It kind of reminds me kind of from a different perspective, but so Mike Patton, who was the lead singer of Faith No More and Peeping Tom and Tomahawk, the band Tomahawk put out an album years ago. I'm trying to think of the name of the album. Well, either way, it was kind of an exploration into Native American culture and music. And they pretty much did mostly instrumental and like throat speaking or throat singing. That was like based on actual like Native American music from older tribes, and like they did like a lot of work to like capture that kind of feel, but it was still new. And that's kind of the feel I got when I heard some of the stuff. Like, let's take a listen to The Willow here. It's kind of what you just said, and this song is what got me to that.
Away, away, here you are. Nom, nom. Go walk, what's up? Yeah, hey, yeah. Nom, nom.
So that's a great example of like, it feels okay. So more background on Le Guin. So she is the daughter of two like very well relatively famous cultural anthropologists who worked a lot with Native American tribes in Northern California.
Aha. It's all coming together now.
So you can tell that there's a lot of inspiration there, and I think that it does a good job in not being disrespectful to that or mocking that or also like aping it too closely. It's definitely its own thing. But so when she was talking about with Barton about making this album, like Barton got excited about it. So he was, I guess he's like famous for analog synthesizer type experimentation. So once they started talking, he started building the instruments that she described in the novel and then taught all the musicians on the album how to play them. So there's like apparently like a 7 foot long horn and a flute made out of bone.
Awesome.
And then when they finally got around to talking about, he's like, when he asked Le Guin if the Kesh spoke English, she responded, "Drat!" and then spent months making up an alphabet, including the back of the novel and vocabulary for the lyrics.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just really weird. I feel like this is the kind of music that it's really weird in that it's definitely a product of its time. It feels like New Age music from that period, but it also feels, maybe part of this is down to how good the remaster is. It feels very contemporary. I guess actually more accurately, it just feels timeless.
Yeah.
To me, anyway. It doesn't fit anywhere in...
I don't know. Like, I don't know how much I would listen to it without having that knowledge, because, like I said...
Yeah, I don't know what the... Yeah. Who is listening to this, and for what, and when?
It'd be like any other kind of media that has, like, immersion through other forms of media. Like,
yeah.
If somebody, like, looked at the pictures from House of Leaves... without having any reference to why the text was all fucked up like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, that's super interesting. Thank you for bringing that up.
You're welcome. I just thought it's as far as music goes, it's one of the most interesting things that I can think of. Or unique, maybe.
Yeah. It's kind of a different form of music than what we're normally talking about. Is most of what we're talking about is popular music, or, you know, and that's not necessarily, that's more of like an intellectual study than like, but there's also art involved. I don't know. It's
totally,
it's too difficult to classify.
Absolutely.
So it's like human music.
I was just going to say, do you want to transition to the logical next point? Did you listen to this album? I'm a little confused because I swore I listened to a single called Human Music, but I can't find it now.
This is the song Human Music.
This is the album Human Music.
No, but I have the song. That's the song I have queued up here is Human Music.
Well, I'm extremely confused because now I'm looking on Tidal and the only album is, there's no single named that, but there's an album named that. But it doesn't have a song named Human Music on it.
You looking at Tidal for music results is like me going on Ask Jeeves to try to find out.
That's so mean. All right, go on. Play this single, because this is definitely what I was thinking of.
So this is Human Music by Solomon Gray. So who's this? Did we lose him? Is Nate gone?
You did not lose me. I lost myself. Solomon Gray is like apparently a duo that showed up first on one of the Anjuna Deep compilations, and it came off much more electronic music than any of his albums. And I can't get a read on if I like it or not. It's like beautiful and tender, but also like vaguely cinematic, but also like I can't believe it's called Human Music, because that's all I can think of to describe it.
Here's another song here. It's Inside Something. I can't see it on my screen.
Wow. I have no idea how to describe what to feel about this. It's beautiful, but I don't know if I like it.
I don't think I like it. You said something to me about something earlier. I don't know what context I would listen to this in. And that's
what's the use case? Yeah. I don't, is it relaxing? I'm not quite sure. It's like, also pretty introspective.
If you're like getting a massage or something.
It's like modern new age, but it's not, it's very confusing. And it was Inside Outside, by the way.
Well, I figured.
I just, oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just very, I don't know.
All right.
Good talk.
Very good talk. We're
an interesting album.
We are failing as we go. We're getting into like weirder and weirder music. We're going down this downward spiral.
And we're just like, where we, yeah, the we music sound. Yeah.
Any just, words?
You figure out what.
This is like what I feel like our ancestors were afraid would happen to music.
Totally.
It's like, what is this? What are you listening to?
The UK band and composers. I would listen to Miradors. Their songs on Anjuna Deep are really good, but they don't sound anything like this. They're more, they're like a middle point between this and like housey ass house music. Lane 8, who we talked about in January's episode, uses Solomon Gray on a few of his songs. And that originally is where I got the crossover.
So Solomon
and that's
Gray more combo. Of a singer than a music composer?
I don't, it sounds like they're a duo, but two composers. I don't get it. I don't know what their background is. It's very strange. I wonder if they're one of these. There seems to be a lot more of this in the UK, people that come out with like a classical music master's degree and then make electronic music.
Are you sure you're not very weird. Confusing Solomon Gray with Gray, who is a duo?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'm very doubtful ever since that time when we listened to that. What was it? Your Arctic.
God, that was so confusing. Yes, that was a critical mistake. That's very upsetting. I wanted to believe. Biosphere,
yes.
I really wouldn't have thought there would have been two biospheres, but then. Yeah, that's probably the most embarrassing mistake I'll
the sequel
ever
to
make on this podcast, I hope.
All right, so to continue down this trend of weird-ass music, next up I have here Why Oak.
Oh, this is weird, but good.
This is W-Y-E-O-A-K. I know absolutely nothing about it. I just checked out this album when it came out, I think this weekend or last week. Very recently, and I thought it was really different and cool. So let's take a listen to the instrument.
I don't know if that's sample.
Yeah, this was another one I had trouble.
Yeah, this is hard
finding a sample.
Totally.
There's like a lot of different movements to their songs. It seems like, but none of them are under 30 seconds.
Even the intro, beautifully called parentheses tuning.
Yeah. I thought that was really interesting.
36 seconds. And I've never seen that.
It did sound like just tuning for the first song. Oh, by the way, the name of the album is The Louder I Call,
The Faster It Runs.
And I realize now the whole reason I even bothered checking out this album is strictly because of the cover art. It reminded me of one of my favorite photographers who did multiple album covers for Pink Floyd and Mars Volta.
Yeah. Are you thinking of the women sitting in a row for Floyd? Or
I wasn't, but I think that's the same photographer. It's the same photographer who did the Division Bell cover. And
I love,
A lot of that stuff. Mars Volta's album, Francis the Mute. It's that kind of like very vivid, hyper-realistic photography style. He also did covers for the band Muse. I don't know if that's who did the cover for this album, but it's the same style.
Yeah. It's very stately. Mm-hmm.
Which is something that I find really interesting about modern music and the way we consume modern music is, like, growing up to find new music because it wasn't on the radio and I didn't know enough about the internet, I would go to the record store and look at album covers pretty much and try my best to find something good. And I really appreciate that can still happen in streaming services like Apple Music and Spotify and stuff like that. Like, just
The visual browsing is really,
it's interesting.
Shockingly, it's almost more important now, even.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
you're flipping through hundreds, and you know.
And I feel like a lot of electronic music hasn't caught on to this because so much of it is like
single focused. It's just a record label logo usually.
Yeah, and it'll have like some words in the worst font and things like
that.
I did have one more track from White Oak here. This is Join. I think this is a bit more of a quiet song, if I remember correctly, but let's check it out. That's right. I picked that song because it had the only reference point that I could find for this album. That song reminds me of a James Yule.
Oh, that's interesting. I really was going to say I really like this sort of style of indie rock, and that's interesting.
Because there's like it's like a kind of acoustic song with more, as the song progresses, more and more electronic elements, which I think is something that James Yule definitely did.
Very much so. Dream pop. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like this. It's like indie as fuck, but it's not, it doesn't, I don't know. It's very cool.
And it's something, this is one of the reasons why I want to have this podcast, because there's, like, you brought up multiple times what clubs are playing this and things like that, but there is no world where that music is going to be on the radio. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I know the radio's dying and everything like that, but we have to understand that there's still a large majority, I would say, of people that strictly consume their music based off what's on the radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
Despite there being so many different streaming platforms, because even, like, when you do get into streaming platforms, like the Pandora stations that you're going to put on, or Apple Music or Spotify, is like, oh, what's the top 40 or the classic rock,
and I think a lot of times people use those services so they don't have to do the research or read into a particular band, so that the algorithm can take care of.
Of course, this podcast isn't going to probably reach that sort of person either, because this is even more work than just going on fucking a service and finding your own thing. So I don't even know who we're talking about, but or talking to. But it's mostly just something I feel like we need to do, is to let the world know about these people that they may just pass by when they're looking
for music. It's really interesting. It's very hard to, I mean, I think in terms of discovering music, you and I, like, scrolling through the new releases, looking at album art is honestly one of the most, like, you could follow record labels, but in order to, like, truly find new things, that's one of the best ways you can do it, sadly, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is frustrating because it doesn't feel like there's any, it's pretty hit or miss.
Let's get to Hidden Empire. So, confession, I did not have a chance to listen to this album. I kind of skimmed through it and just randomly selected some samples.
Yeah, it's another, like, good techno-ish tech house kind of thing. Let's play some samples.
I don't know. I haven't looked up anything about this, but based off the songs that I kind of listened to and the titles, I'm going to guess this is somehow related to Detroit.
Ooh, interesting. Play on first.
And I'm going to also guess... I'll play Acid Flashback here. This is a sample from the song Acid Flashback.
Okay. As far as I know, it's very German.
Really?
Yet again, this seems to be a thing that keeps coming up accidentally.
I think the reason I said that is because this next song is called Limbo in Detroit.
Yeah, I played that. Glad you picked that one, because that's one of my favorite songs in the album. It's like it almost dips almost into synthwave.
Yeah, a little bit. It feels that felt very different, whereas Acid Flashbacks felt such like a callback or almost a calling out of like 90s club music sort
yes.
of, or not club music, what's the term I'm looking for? It sounds like they're randomly hitting buttons on a synthesizer that was very popular.
Totally. One of the funny things about techno, and especially German techno, is there's often that like weird sense of humor where songs are like parodies half the time. Mm-hmm. And you're, well, not half the time, but yeah. And
like I almost expected to hear like the da-na-na-na-na or something like that. But then
totally.
Limbo in Detroit was a lot more fresh and didn't sound like everything else, so.
Yeah, I'd say it's worth a listen if you're into electronic music. It's just kind of, there's definitely not any like radio friendly front singles. It's just an interesting album.
I think I'll check that out.
Cool.
I wish I had a chance, but you just put that on the list like last night, didn't you?
Yeah, I pulled that one fast on you.
Yeah. So we are almost coming to the end of our list here, but before we get to the last track, I did want to bring up a couple things that we had somebody from our Twitter followers reach out to us. So at J Yanchek reached out to us with a couple song suggestions, saying a couple unique tracks you might like. Cockroach King by Hero Harken here, but it's Haken or Haken, H-A-K-E-N, and Blood on the Radio by Thank You Scientist. So I did check these out, and fuck, these are really good songs. So thank you for doing that. These aren't new. This looks like it's around 2012, 2013. But I did want to try to play a quick sample just to thank you for, and absolutely if anybody else wants to reach out with recommendations. We obviously do not know anything about music, so whatever you can do to enlighten us would be greatly appreciated. So here is... a quick little snip of Blood on the Radio. I just really thought the beginning of this song was cool because that's not what the rest of the song is like. So I don't know how much. I think within the 30 seconds we'll be able to get it, but we'll see. Damn it.
That is a very upsetting endpoint.
Yeah, I know, because it was just about to get into the actual real song, which is more progressive rock. It reminded me a little bit of maybe Deer Hunter or what's the one Oh, I don't know.
Deer Hunter's great. I haven't listened to that in a while.
Yeah, I know. That's definitely something we have to go back to. I would like to really explore yes. that whole series of albums with you.
Yeah, that would be a cool.
That's a project that we have to do. But yeah. So that was pretty cool. And then the other song here that he recommended, Cockroach King, is also very good. I think I need, after listening to this song, I need to go back and listen to more from, I don't know how to say the name of it, Haken, H-A-K-E-N. But this is Cockroach King off of the album The Mountain.
Tantalized by the cockroach and its promise, I fantasized about soaring with golden wings. Hypnotized by the cockroach and its promise, I was compromised.
That is so weird and interesting.
I know. It's like,
I thank you so much. This album.
Yeah. Thank you so much for recommending that. Cause that is like,
yeah, that's fascinating.
Right up my alley. And I'm sad that we have to cut it off there. Cause the song just gets better from there too. But also, with the guitar riffs, especially from this, I do know this user who is, a listener. He is the bassist for one of, the bands I used to play with, but one of my favorite albums this band came out with, Idiot. So I also recommend anybody go out and check out the album The Nature of Circumstance by the band Idiot. They're no cool. longer together, but that is such a good album, and I just wish that for some reason they got popular. So anything I can do to help that happen would be great. So I guess unless you had anything else you wanted to bring up, we can get to the last album.
I wanted to talk about, well, wait, what's the last album?
Oh, you put something back on here.
Well, that's fine. I wanted to talk about Deadmau5, this new orchestral.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you. You asked me about this new Deadmau5 thing, and I think it is a title exclusive because I can't find it.
Yes, I believe that's correct. I don't know how long it is, but it's really interesting. And what I wanted to say is we don't have clips from it.
Yeah, so if you could just sing it.
Yeah, I think the listeners are better off with that not happening. It's really interesting, though, because I guess... I don't guess. It is covers of his previous songs in orchestral form. But what I really thought was interesting was something that's not going to be interesting to anyone that's worked with an orchestra before, but it was just curious for me to consider it. He talked about how it was very different from a normal electronic... like when he makes a normal album, it's very different than what ended up happening when you record a classical album. So basically he does this thing called Mousetrap Mondays where... he'll stream on Twitch and people can pay him to critique their music and all proceeds go to charity. And during one of those streams, he mentioned that he was interested in, he's always been curious about doing orchestral covers. And lo and behold, one of the people watching has a background in that, and they got together and they composed this thing. And he basically said it was really curious taking months to score something and then like not ever hearing it until he paid an orchestra to do it. And they sat down and played it perfectly the first time. So it was like months of concept and then 1 hour of execution, wow. Which is like really interesting when you're an electronic musician and you spend all of your time like listening and iterating just to think of the difference. It's kind of fascinating.
Absolutely. I really want to listen. I'm a big Deadmau5 fan. I would love to hear that. Cause one of, my favorite things I've ever heard from Deadmau5 is actually not his standard electronic music. It was what was the name of it? It was all piano orientated, and he put out a series of videos with it. What's the name of it here? The Velt? No, that's not it.
Yeah. Oh, well, the one with Chris. Da 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 da.
Nope, that's just what came up there. It was like a very stark like and dark series of videos that was mostly piano and had like old like medieval paintings that were viewed in the videos.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but if you can think of what that is and write it down, I would be happy to put that in the show notes. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, I'll definitely get it. I just don't know how to search Google. I started using Ask Jeeves like you suggested.
God damn it.
There's just nothing coming up.
God damn it.
But yeah, so there was that I wasn't able to get. I'm sorry about that. And is there anything else you wanted to shout out?
I'm gonna take that as a no. I would say Apollo and the Rockets, The Lunchroom Kids, is a pretty interesting tiny little EP, and it's someone I know's friend is in the band, and it's like good.
Yeah, I really feel bad about not getting that. I feel like we should get it on the next one. I just realized today that I hadn't had a chance to listen to it, and trying to get a clip
it's
was
short.
Like I don't want to.
I recommend it. Just check out our playlist and maybe bounce off it there. Yeah, but maybe we'll talk about it more.
Yeah. So,
you didn't want to talk about the Decemberists album?
No, I do want to. I just that's the last thing, and I wanted to close it out. So, Decemberists put out a new album. Decemberists is absolutely another one of my favorite bands. And this is a great album. Obviously, we put the single for Severed on the last episode, and yeah, this album, I don't know. I guess I don't know what I was expecting with Severed being so strange, but there is more electronic influence on this album, more keyboard focused stuff. But also they kind of went in a few other directions, more bluesy rock, more Beatles-esque rock kind of. But yeah, I think it's an awesome album. What did you think of it, Nate?
Didn't listen to it yet. No. Do you have samples?
Yes.
Maybe a sample.
Let's play a sample of Cutting Stone, which is the prequel song to Severed.
Cutting Stone, oh, fear me now. Weather wild or weather wild. Though I travel far from home, always have. A valley green and wide, a suitor wept for a dying bride.
So I just get to talk about this then. So yeah, that's kind of I don't want to say a standard December song, but kind of a what you would expect from a December songs, but there is more of like a layered feel to it, more like they did more studio work and more electronic synth than what you would normally see. There has been piano, obviously, and since on previous December songs, but more of a focus on that, I feel like, and more of an 80s feel on this album, sort of, which is what everybody's doing now, so I'm not surprised there.
Yep.
But then I have another song here, Your Ghost, and here's a sample. It's fun. I feel like the Decemberists on the last couple albums have had like thrown in songs that are they just like really want to have fun in the studio, and they do some weird shit like that. But that kind of that's what I'm talking about. It kind of has like an older Beatles feel to me.
Oh, that's interesting.
If that makes any sense, like a pop rock song, but not in the bad way that those have gone.
It's like pop rock, but not bad.
Yeah. And then I also had the title track here, I'll Be Your Girl, which is more of an acoustic ballad love song type thing. So check that out.
So when everything's soft abrades you, when fortune has long betrayed you, and you're longing for an arm to stay you, I'll be your girl.
Whoops. I cut off
interesting.
The keyboard solo there at the end.
How dare you?
I think it's a super interesting album. A lot of the songs are kind of more than like a whole album theme. A lot of the songs tell a story and things like that. I think it's an awesome listen. So I would definitely recommend that. And I also, to fully close it out, I wanted to close this out with another cover that I did for a December song.
Awesome.
So I think that I'll just close out with this, and then we'll have the theme song to close it out, and just let everybody know. Thanks for listening. If you want to reach out to us on Twitter at Broken Dial Radio, or email brokendialradio@gmail.com. And we will be getting up the episode of the Norwood Suite, the video game focused episode, as soon as we can.
Oh, it's going to be so good.
I'm excited about that. I really want to reach out and do more things with this. Obviously I love music, but I want to do other things too. So we'll do more book stuff. We'll do video game stuff. Who knows? Yeah, maybe there'll be a movie in there or some shit.
Yeah.
We just got
to
have
an interesting channel to connect with some smaller scale video game composers as well. That might be something worth doing in the future.
That would be awesome. I need to come up with a name for the video game segments. I thought that reading notes was a really good one for books because it's music theme.
That is really good. I like that. That's funny.
Cause it's a pun.
Yeah, no, thank you. I got it.
So, yeah. But thanks for listening. Here is my cover of Grace Cathedral Hill by the Decemberists. Sorry about the bad audio quality. This was recorded on a phone in like 2012 or something like that. So, but yeah, thanks for listening.
City lights blind your eyes tonight. feeling better now? Are you feeling better now? Are you feeling better now? La 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 la.
Broken Dial Radio.